welcome to Podworld, a podcast about the podcasts that you should be listening to. I'm Louise Blaine.
And I'm David Mel Roberts, or DMR. And welcome, podcast fans.
Yes, welcome back. So if you've listened before, welcome back. But if you will forgive us 2 seconds just to say what the podcast is about. So in Podworld, we highlight a specific podcast genre. We talk through 4 big recommendations, and they're always very different, and we might even not agree on them, who knows. But then we also interview a podcast creator from the same genre. And then at the end, we wrap things up in a nice bowl with some little extra recommendations from us that we found on our travels and some listener recommendations too.
And today we're celebrating and connecting with the natural world. We've been listening to podcasts about nature and wildlife and how to better protect the earth. And we pick out the ones which we think you should be listening to. And later in the show, Lou has an incredible chat with ecologist and documentary filmmaker and podcast host, Chris Morgan.
Yes, he's irritatingly talented, that one. Speaking of irritatingly talented, if you think we are, please follow us on all our socials and do rate and review on your podcast app that you're listening to. We really appreciate it. But let's get started. It's time to go into nature.
So listening to podcasts about nature and wildlife and the world around us, I thought it might sometimes be a little, I don't know, disheartening because what we know about the climate crisis and what humans have done to the earth. I was not 100% sure this was going to be a joyful thing, but actually it's not at all been disheartening because there's a lot of celebration of nature and actually lots of education and some very easy practical ways that we can all help to improve our relationship with the world and our impact that we have. And actually, that's given me a lot of hope and also reaffirmed my love for the outside world and for outdoor space, especially after being locked in for the last 12 months.
Just a bit. I think it's really interesting what you're saying about it being slightly negative sometimes, because we've all watched those incredible David Attenborough documentaries that have now arrived on Netflix, which are quite sad. You know, it's here's the world you had before and here's what you're all doing to it. But I think it's, and you know, Chris talks about this a little bit later on, it's really important that we understand that. But at the same time, learning about it should give us a new sort of appreciation for it. And I've certainly found that I'm really craving nature. I mean, I've been in my flat in Glasgow for a long time now, and I would love to go to the sea and go to lochs and walk up mountains and just sit and exist in nature. And actually, podcasts are a really good way of doing that. And a couple that we're going to talk about today have amazing soundscapes. So I think we'll get on with it. Here are 4 amazing, but very different podcasts about the natural world. And don't worry, we'll get even more in at the very end.
So have you heard of a forest bath, Lou?
Is that when you take your giant claw-footed tub and put it in the middle of the forest and then have a bath?
That sounds really good. But it's the way I've heard about it is it's a meditation technique where you don't have some headphones on, you don't listen to podcasts, you go into a forest or into a field, and you literally are very, very mindful about all the sounds and all the things you can see. And if you do that for 15, 20 minutes, your breathing slows down and you really focus on, oh, that bird that's just flown through, or you can hear some scratching because a dog has just gone past or whatever. All that brings you into the moment. And it's a very, very calming and relaxing thing. Well, my first recommendation is very much like a forest bath in terms of meditation. It's called The Stubborn Light of Things.
Hi, how are you doing? I'm walking through a country churchyard. It's mid-morning, the sun's out, little bit of a breeze.
It's a creation from Melissa Harrison, and she's a nature writer, a novelist, and she lives in rural Suffolk. And she decided in 2020, when everybody was locked down, to basically record the changing of the seasons from spring through to autumn. And her aim was, as she said, to bring the outdoors into as many lockdown homes as I could. So this is an incredibly beautiful soundscape kind of audio. She uses silence, which is usually the enemy of radio and podcasts.
That's a no-no.
And actually, the very first episode, I was thinking, have I pressed play? And then suddenly her voice comes in and says, how are you doing today? In a really lovely, calming way. And then you hear a bird. And I thought, is that a real bird? Because I was outside. Is that a real bird? And no, it was her way of actually just taking you down a notch. And just beautiful. And everything she does is captured beautifully. You know, the way she opens the gate to her back garden to go out for a walk, the sound of her dog whimpering or running past her. And actually, she also has an incredibly soft, gentle, almost like a guided meditation type voice. But it is actually more than that, because she's turned all the sounds of nature right up in the mix, done incredibly well to capture things like the sound of the shingle beach when she walks on it, or the gulls, as she taught me. Then there's no such thing as a seagull. There's just gulls.
Gulls.
But there's also interviews, and there's a weekly poem, and she does actually talk about the nature that she sees. So you do learn, but you don't feel like you're, because I'm not very good at names of animals and birds and things like that. And if I'm in a nature program, I sometimes feel like I'm not that knowledgeable, so I shouldn't be there. But actually, she sort of explains it and brings you in. So that whole package, for me, it's just, I would highly recommend it for anybody who needs to calm their mind.
So I loved it. I think the first episode I listened to was, she was meant to be going to the coast to record some, I think it was some birds, but it was raining outside. So the episode started with the rain pounding against the window, you know, that lovely satisfying noise.
Yeah.
And basically the whole first part of the podcast was just her explaining that she was meant to go, but she couldn't, but she was cozy. And she describes her cottage and the fire and how she's making a cup of tea. And you can hear her boiling the kettle, and she talks about the history, and she ended up reading some really interesting diaries. And it was just this really, you just sit and just listen. You don't do the dishes at the same time. You don't do anything. You just sit and you have a cup of tea and you just, this is fine. So I was very surprised by how evocative I found it, because I do find things. I don't have direct ASMR, but I did find this particularly peaceful. And it's all, I think a lot of these are very, very British, in a very wholesome Sunday afternoon on BBC One kind of way after Antiques Roadshow. And that's fine. And it's genuinely quite a nice break from, as you so often know, that I listen to Relentless True Crime podcasts. So it was a nice holiday from those.
Yeah, and that's why I chose it as my first one, because I thought that the way she does put us in touch with nature, you can go in the natural order on this one. So if you do like the idea of going from spring through to autumn, obviously start at season one, but actually you can totally dip in to any episode and get yourself a little bit of guided meditation as you listen to nature. So, well, what's your first recommendation, Lou?
So my first one is a podcast called Ologies.
Okay, Scorpiology. Hell to the yes, this is a real ology. It's a subset of arachnology, arachnids. And scorpion comes from the Greek, are you ready for this? For scorpion. Okay, that is not something that made me say, oh my God. All right, so this ologist I met under very, very weird circumstances 2 years ago in a dusty field in the middle of nowhere.
Now, Ologies is from Ali Ward, and she's an Emmy award-winning science correspondent who's worked for CBS and the CW and various other things, and the Travel Channel. And funnily enough, trivia-wise, she also invented the McNuggetini with one of my other favourite podcasters, Georgia Hardstark. But that's not what I'm here for. Basically, Ologies is basically Ali just interviewing all these fascinating people about all kinds of ologies. So ornithology, entomology, which is about bugs, ornithology was birds, obviously, whatever the study of rats is called, I've quite forgotten it, nephrology, which is the science of kidneys. And basically she just speaks to these amazing scientists and people who work in nature and work in all of these different industries, and just chats to them in the most brilliant, fascinating, educational way without making you feel like you're having a science chat. You know, I think these people, she's selected really interesting interviewees who break things down in a way that is interesting. She asks the questions that we would ask, not as someone who understands everything. I know all kinds of things about cicadas now that I didn't know before. Who knew that every 17 years, didn't know that was a thing. She also, throughout the interview, she kind of sprinkles in little facts, because she understands that maybe an hour and a half of some one person talking back and forth maybe is a little bit exhausting on the ears. So she kind of sprinkles in some humor or a little bit facts or little trivia pieces, which actually I really appreciated. And I found it just really interesting and really endearing. And you can kind of pick where you want. So if you think, oh, I think I want to learn about cicadas today, or oh, why should I care about rats? You just kind of pick and choose. But I do recommend picking one that you don't think you're going to like. Pick something that you think you don't find interesting. And I guarantee that Ali will have found someone who makes it the most exciting thing in the world.
Yeah, totally agree. I picked one that just, I went, huh? And it was the space junk archaeology one. And there was a conversation with the specialist about what makes space, you know, space junk historical, because, you know, actually we should think about like satellites and the ISS and all that sort of stuff. It's all fairly recent. So what, you know, how can we call it archaeology? But actually there's this whole view that once something goes up in the air, or actually once something has happened, in effect, it's history. So, yep. You know, even if something happened 10 seconds ago, it's history. But it was such an interesting episode in terms of why it'd be interesting for us to actually have an ology for the space junk, and what it says about us, and you know, when this stuff, some of this stuff falls back down to Earth and then they put it in a museum and all this sort of stuff. Yeah, absolutely fascinating.
What's up next for you?
So the next one is actually linked to what I was saying at the beginning of the show. It's called 39 Ways to Save the Planet. And at first, again, I was like, oh, is this going to be making me feel like a bit sad?
Guilt. And such guilty. Guilt.
Yes, exactly. But actually, this is not at all like that. This is really, really practical, really helpful, really positive.
Climate change is real. It's happening, but it's not the end of the world. I'm Tom Heap, and in a new podcast from BBC Radio 4, I'll reveal 39 ways to save the planet.
We've got a new material and a new way of putting solar cells together that produces much more power than traditional or existing photovoltaics.
Our brightest brains are developing...
It's a partnership between BBC Radio 4 and the Royal Geographical Society, and they present basically 39 ideas to, you know, relieve the stress that climate change is exerting on the planet. So the format is that each episode, they have a scientist and a case study, and they talk about a specific solution to climate change. And it is very solution focused, and it's upbeat. It's got a positive vibe. The episodes are quite short and it's not too overwhelming. And it's just this whole solution-based structure. So yeah, so just to give you some examples of the episodes and the solutions, there's this whole thing about Siberian rewilding, because I don't know if you know, but the permafrost, there's a big issue with permafrost in Siberia, where it's actually starting to thaw, and there's inside the permafrost, there's trapped a huge amount of carbon, which if it thaws will go into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
But one of the weird things is in Siberia is they've been planting trees, and that should be a good thing for the environment. But actually in this case, it's not a good thing, because the trees are a darker color in a way. So they actually absorb more of the sun, the heat from the sun, and they are contributing to the permafrost thawing. Whereas if you had it more as it used to be, which was steppes and big plains, actually that reflects the heat much more easily, and the permafrost stays permanent.
Okay, we like a permafrost. We do like a permafrost. Yeah.
And the rewilding part of it is actually because the snow on the permafrost, if it's left as snow, it acts as a blanket. Again, a blanket warms up. But if you rewild it with bison and woolly mammoths and things like that, it tramples the snow.
The common woolly mammoth tramples
the snow and no longer acts as a blanket. So all of these things, I was like, you know, that's an interesting solution. Anyway, there's other episodes like how do we improve photosynthesis so you can produce a lot more food from less space, in effect.
Yep.
And then a really, really important episode is the impact on climate change of educating and empowering girls, because actually in some parts of the world, many girls leave education before secondary school. And actually, it is proven that those that complete secondary school and even go beyond have a lot more choice. And they also they find a way to earn a better living. And typically they have fewer but healthier children than those that stop their education before secondary school. And the impact on the environment, as we know from population growth, is huge. So that was a very, very interesting interesting episode.
The idea that the patriarchy is literally also contributing to global warming. Even further, toxic masculinity on a global scale is making more carbon.
That's
unreal, but also completely understandable.
Yeah.
And that's an incredible, I hadn't even thought about how that was a thing. I mean, I wish I'd listened to that one. I listened to one actually, which was quite interesting, which was about rice production and how they're looking for alternative rice production, which is not in a body of water. So these enormous rice paddies, they're basically looking to change that and make it so that we don't have to have all this water to do it, which was actually really interesting. It was remarkably interesting how they get it into such a short period of time as well. So 15 minutes feels like a fine time for a little bit of a science lesson as well. Yeah. And they speak to very interesting people as usual, as all of these podcasts do, which is giving you that great insight into brilliant people that you would just want to sit next to at a dinner table and just relentlessly interview. So they give you that kind of person, which is my favourite.
So what's your final recommendation?
We've got another BBC podcast, because that's because it's brilliant. And it's the BBC Earth podcast.
Once I actually got into the hive for the first time, that's when the magic happened. You know, that's when I noticed the outside world went away.
This is the BBC Earth podcast.
You start seeing this incredible blue water. It's sort of indigo blue and shafts of light penetrating.
It's a podcast the size of a planet about the world in which we live
and the astonishing things in it.
Greens and purples and pinks.
So this has the most magnificent range of topics. It's presented and produced by Emily Knight, and she's just this amazing storyteller. So each episode has a kind of, it has a theme. So maybe the theme is touch, or the theme is fire, or any those baby iguanas in a volcano at one point. But that's only the theme of one of the stories. Well, that's only the topic of one of the stories, and the rest of them kind of come out from that. So I just listen to the most fascinating, strange things about how snails have teeth and how a woman became friends with an octopus, and just really interesting miniature dives into so many bits of nature. So it doesn't matter where, underwater, on cliff sides. And they have that whole amazing thing that I think actually, gosh, Robert Murphy, when we talked about true crime, was talking about all of the files and all of the sort of amount of information, for instance, that ITV has that would be great for podcasts. But what BBC is doing is it's taking its trove of information and its film recording and video recording and everything over the years and kind of mining it for nature coverage that works really perfectly in a podcast. So even over lockdown, they've been able to pull together all this amazing stuff because they already have it and it's just sitting there and no one can hear it. And this way, it's being mined in really interesting little palatable chunks with great music and really just very evocative storytelling. And I love the BBC Earth podcast. And also, you don't need to start anywhere. You can just go in anywhere, pick something, and you've got these kind of like, they're quite BuzzFeed-y sort of headlines, sort of the desert rocks that sing, or this river is legally a person. And you just go, ooh, that's intriguing. I want to listen to that. I loved it. I found it was just one of those wonderful transportative podcasts. And I suppose they're all quite similar in the fact that our favourite ones, that they take us to people who are telling us things. But it's just like the most wonderful science lesson from that teacher that would always give you the best lessons. And it's that in a podcast. And it's wonderful.
It is. I love the way it's, within the sort of 30 minutes or so, they tend to have two or three ways of telling stories, don't they? So you go from one to the other. The one I listened to started very much with the depths of the oceans, but it ended up in the highest trees with a woman who basically was researching in the canopy of the rainforest. And actually she fell, spoiler alert, she fell something like 30 feet and, you know, did a lot of damage to herself. But then it's the story about how she actually managed to get back up into the trees, even though that she had ruptured some vertebrae and her spleen had exploded and, her ribs had broken, etc. But yeah, these three little stories within 30 minutes, as you say, they have access to so much great content. It's a lovely, lovely podcast to dip in and out of.
Yeah, It's really, really good. And speaking of really, really good, so every episode, we have a chat with a podcast host or a producer from our featured genre. And for this episode, I caught up with Chris Morgan, who honestly is the most extraordinary man. He's an ecologist, a documentary filmmaker, which means you should definitely check out Bear Trek on Amazon. And he's also, importantly, which is why he's here, the host of an incredible podcast called The Wild, which is a co-production with KUOW in Seattle. And we had an amazing chat. Here is.
Welcome back to the adventure.
And I just saw two massive pairs of eyes looking back at me. They blinked twice and then disappeared.
Welcome back to the science.
And as a fly snob, I mean, I would say that there are things that flies can do, you know, flight maneuvers, performance, that just other insects can't.
You know why I have a dream? I want to plant more trees because I don't want this bird to go away.
Chris Morgan, welcome to Podworld.
Hi, Louise. Nice to be here.
It's so exciting to have you here. And I think I could go through the fact that you've done all kinds of things. You've done TV, you've even done video games, and you've done podcasts. But can you tell me a little bit about your background and how The Wild really came about?
Yeah, it's I'm an ecologist and specialize in big carnivores, like especially bears of the world. So I'm in my early 50s now, 52 years old. And when I was 18, I discovered bears. And a long story, I won't take you down that rabbit hole, but I was in New Hampshire, discovered that these creatures lived on this planet, wanted to learn all I could about them and follow this sort of path in ecology. And that ecology lent to sort of, I've always had this curious fascination with the natural world. I think I was born with what I call the nature gene. I think most of us are, right? And then it's kind of whittled out by society a little in some ways for a lot of people. But I stuck with it, went to college, went to university and studied ecology and found myself really excited talking about it quite a lot. As much as the science I was doing, I was more interested in sharing the science. So it's sort of been a journey of doing the science, discovering things myself in the bear world and big carnivore world and ecology world, and then sort of bringing it to people as a story that they enjoy listening to and digesting and being inspired by. And so The Wild is a part of that journey. We've been working on The Wild for just a couple of years now, and it's been quite popular, and I think because people love being reconnected with nature, they love getting back to our roots. You know, I think we're all just hairless apes at the end of the day, you know, scratch beneath the surface, and we're we're not too far from the distant wild in our history ourselves. So it's just a way to reconnect people in a really immersive way through their ears, you know, taking people back to nature through their ears, really, is what I'd like to call it, the podcast. So
it absolutely does that in a way that there's this incredible blend of belonging somewhere and being somewhere, but also learning as well. And also your absolute sheer passion for what you're talking about. It's in every word. And honestly, I now know more about the difference between beaver sex through smell than I ever thought I would know.
Glad we could do that for you, Louise. Yeah.
The trivia that I now have in my head. But I think, I mean, is that educational balance? Is that really your sort of goal? Has that always been the drive there?
In some ways, I feel like I've been on this journey as a teacher in some ways, and it just is reaching big audiences through the film documentaries that I've done and now the podcast. And I love looking at it that way, but I don't like being seen as a teacher because really it's a two-way communication thing. I feel like, you know, I've got this insatiable curiosity, and so I always want to turn over rocks and see what's around the next bend, sort of literally and figuratively, you know. And with that curiosity comes this wonder. And, you know, whenever I'm out in the wilderness, and I spent a lot of time out in wild places, I feel in some ways, if I'm out there on my own, which I often am, I feel a little selfish keeping it to myself because the wonder just overwhelms me. I love it. I feel like I'm in love with nature so much. I want to share it with people. And the podcast is a lovely way to do that. And it's a simple way of doing it. You know, it's not the clutter of camera crews and commotion and the madness that a film production can be. It sort of distills storytelling down into its purest form. And if you've not got a good story, you won't keep someone through their ears. You don't have visuals to lean on. And I love that. So it really pushes us to write the best episodes and make someone feel like they're kind of there with me as a friend in the forest or in the desert or in the ocean, you know, wherever we might be on that episode, and just sort of take them away. And a little bit of it is medicine as well, you know. People miss being able to get into nature as much as perhaps they used to or want to. COVID aside, you know, people want to get out more and more than they're sometimes able to with their busy lives. So it's a way to do it, you know, through the podcast.
Well, talking about that intimacy, that's absolutely there, because DMR have talked about it a lot over the past few weeks about the real appeal of podcasts that way and how they're transformative and transportative, really. But I think a lot of people are very used to their nature documentaries being on Netflix and David Attenborough, and that's just it. Did you think that people were quite surprised by where they could go just with their ears?
Totally, totally. That's really well said. People are so used to the visuals, you know, and it's a surprise to hear that natural history can work just through their ears versus the visuals, which are always stunning and vivid and colorful and scary or cute or impactful in some way, very visually. So it is a challenge, but I think it's almost more powerful this way, because you really let people's 50% of it is someone else, is the listener's imagination, right? You know, you deliver half of the ingredients and they take themselves there the rest of the way, if it's done well. And so it's worked surprisingly well. If you've got really nice audio that you can mix in with a great story and a couple of great characters and some laughs and some tears and some intrigue and some inspiration, really, is what we're going for. Someone said recently, well, there were a couple of things, you know, you mentioned David Attenborough, and he's my absolute hero, of course, as he is with many of us. And someone described our podcast as the Planet Earth of podcasts. I'm like, all right, I can die a happy man now.
You're done. That's you.
No one say anything else after that, right? You know, so that was a lovely point to get to. And that's what we're going for, this like really well-produced documentary in audio form. So yeah, hopefully we're getting somewhere near that. But and every one of the episodes is really very different. You know, we've got the full produced 30-minute length ones that take us on stories all around the world, and I'm there and I'm immersed in it, and I take people with me in that sort of form. Then we've got shorter episodes that we've tried as well. We call them Wild Bites, and those are sometimes 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 minutes long. So, and we can do that about anything, and it's wonderful. We did one one was titled, How Does a Sperm Whale Dive a Mile Beneath the Surface and Not Explode, right? So it dives into the science and physiology of a sperm whale and literally them diving under the ocean to a mile depth and hunting for squid and doing it 10 times a day with no problem, you know. It's just amazing. So there is just countless stories from nature that you can turn to, which is really wonderful.
I love the fact, even talking about that now, I'm excited and immediately going to find that episode. But you're talking about when you do the longer episodes and you interviewing, you're talking about the characters that you meet. I was listening to one of the episodes about wolves and then bats, and the people that you speak to are really fascinating. Is there anyone of the past few years that you spoke to that still stand out as a highlight of, I can't believe I spoke to that person and heard their stories?
You know, so many of them. I think with the world of wildlife, there's a couple of things going on there. Most people who are scientists and embedded in the world of wildlife aren't necessarily the most sociable or gregarious or outgoing people. They don't tell their stories sometimes, but I'd argue they have the best stories in the world, but often they're unheard. So I love tapping into someone's mind and hearing their stories. And the wolf episode is a great one. Dan Curry, I call him the Wolf Ranger. He's one part cowboy, one part wolf environmentalist tree hugger, you know, and he's this beautiful mix of trying to bring these two worlds together, where ranchers in eastern Washington State, near where I live, are sometimes against wolves because they can prey on cattle, and that's their livelihood. And Dan inserts himself into the middle of that sort of microcosm of a world, trying to protect the wolves, but also trying to protect the livelihood of the cowboys and ranchers there. So it's really vivid. I mean, it sounds like something out of a bygone era, doesn't it? You know, and he's a great example of someone who is just passionate to the core, doesn't make much money at this, struggles at it, but he's devoted to these wolves that he loves. But he loves the ranching side of it as well. And you know, it's people like that that really stand out, people who otherwise wouldn't get their stories out there in many ways. There's so many. I think I call them unsung heroes, these conservationists around the world that are saving their species in their little corner of the world and doing it in a non-glorified, humble, quiet way, and the rest of us don't hear about them. So if I can help bring those stories to the world, because they're doing it for all of us, not just themselves and not just their species. It's something that we all need to focus on is what can each of us do right now to help our planet? We've got a few years to figure it out, you know?
Talking about that, in terms of the interest, there's obviously been massive interest in conservation for years now, but do you feel like there is more interest in the past few years as the sort of the message finally gets through that we do need, you know, urgent action, really? Do you think there has been a change in perception and the messaging around it?
I do. Yes, thankfully. Thank God. Just in the nick of time, we hope, right? You know, I'm an eternal optimist. So I always think we can turn things around, make things good, make things whole again, and do it in a smart, smart way, right? Just as an aside, one of our episodes is how hibernating squirrels can help us get to Mars. And in that episode, it's a long story. Actually, it's a short story, but I won't go into it.
The clickbait headline that we'll all click. There's the one.
So that was a short episode about how these hibernating squirrels can teach us astronauts how to hibernate so we can get to Mars. But I'd argue, and I did in this episode, why are we bothering to get to Mars when we've still not figured out this planet, right? Yeah. We need to put resources into the home that we have right now, not future homes that might or might not have promise. So, but I do think the conversation has changed. When I started working in film documentaries with PBS over here in the States and some stuff with Nat Geo and BBC as well, and it used to be that you couldn't mention the word conservation in a wildlife show. Even like 5, 6, 7 years ago, you know, it was like, ooh, yeah, we don't want to go there. It's all a bit preachy. And now, if the word conservation isn't in a script or a treatment, then it's conspicuous, it's missing, and people want it in there, you know, same with climate change elements. So yes, the conversation's going in the right direction, hopefully just in the nick of time. Can I tell you about someone else that I sprung to mind?
Go for it.
That, you know, when you asked me about people that I'm glad that I interviewed, one really moving episode, it became one of our most popular ones. It was called 1 Square Inch of Silence. And it's about a man who calls himself the Sound Tracker. His name's Gordon Hempton and his protege, Matt Mickelson. And what they do is they go and find quiet places on Earth. And it kind of relates to what you're talking about with the future of the planet as well. It's like these quiet places on Earth are very, very rare these days, where there is not silence, but there is no human sound, no human interference with the soundscape that you're sitting in. So they go out and find these quietest places on Earth, and they call it 1 Square Inch of Silence. So I went out with Gordon to the Olympic Mountains near where I live here, and with Matt, and they just take us deep into the forest, and then you sit in this one place where they've had these high-end microphones that have proven that this is one of the quietest places in the world, and it's just magical. And Gordon is one of those people I was so happy to meet and so moved by. He's dedicated his life to this work. I mean, he's in his 60s now. And the sad thing is that Gordon is losing his hearing. He's got this hearing loss issue. And it brings him to tears when he's talking about it. You know, it's powerful stuff. Like, yeah, I just wanted to mention Gordon because he's definitely one of those guys that stuck with me. And I stay in touch with all these people after telling their stories, and I'm honored to do it. You know, he's an amazing guy.
Is it Gordon's work that's the short episodes that you've been releasing recently?
Some of them, yes. We use some of his audio to portray different locations and sounds that I can then voice over, yeah. So when we've been, during COVID, we were less able to get out into the wild. Fortunately, I live near some good wilderness here, so there's lots I can do locally. But then when it came to like traveling further afield, Gordon's like, yep, use my sounds, and here's the library for you. And it's been wonderful because he's like, yeah, one of the best acousticians in the world. You know, it's just incredible what he does.
Well, that was going to be a sort of question in terms of, we were joking before we set record that a lot of us, when we're recording, I don't want any sound. I want no sound whatsoever. Chances are a leaf blower will arrive just as I'm starting to record something really, really vital, and it will sit on my waveform and it will irritate me. But while lots of us just want speech and we're recording speech, you're going out and you want to bring that world, and you're using work like Gordon's work. When you're heading out for one of your episodes, what kind of gear do you take for your sort of general, for your general audio adventures?
So oftentimes I've got my producer, Matt Martin, with me, and he's the gear guy. So he's more technical than I am and knows all the ins and outs of that stuff. And then I started doing stuff solo as well. So I had to equip myself. It's all pretty basic, though. I've got a Shure VP88 microphone that I connect to a Zoom recorder, and that's it, just bare bones. Honestly, any more than that and I'd be lost. I'm I'm definitely much more at home out in the woods, you know, on a hike than I am working around technical gear. But it seems to work. And yeah, just a decent stereo mic, because we want that ambient sound and like kind of back to the philosophy of making someone feel like they're actually sitting next to you in the woods when you're describing the scene to you. So that sort of stereo ambient sound is really important.
When you're going out, and what people are always, again, if they're quite used to everything happening as expected, you know, you went out looking for wolves in Germany, I think it was, and you're desperately looking for a wolf. And narratively, what would happen in that is you would see a wolf and that would be fine. But sometimes you can't predict nature. Nature's unpredictable. There's that old saying that you don't work with animals or children if you want to do something. What's that like to, I mean, that's your thing. You go out and that's what you're, but so what's that like to know that you might not see what you've headed out there to see? And what's that like as an unpredictable creating of and still building the stories that you build?
Well, great question. It is tricky sometimes because you think it's always about a payoff, isn't it? A good story's got to have a payoff, you know. What do we reward people with at the end? And sometimes the payoff is not the one you're expecting, and especially in the world of wildlife when, like you say, it's so unpredictable. I just was in Belize. I did this very safe, COVID-safe, responsible trip to Belize in December. And to go and tell stories about jaguars and scarlet macaws, both species that can be quite difficult to find, especially jaguars. So, you know, it was a great example of me heading to Belize, jaguars. I'm obsessed with big cats, you know, mountain lions and bobcats around where I live here. But jaguars, I know nothing about. So I'm going to Central America. I'm going to go and find one. That's what the episode is going to be about, telling the story of the jaguar and my search for it. And this is about to come out in a few weeks in our next season. So I'm not sure how much to give away, but I go on this search for a jag, never knowing where I'm going to find it. But what's revealed along the way is so much more than me looking for a jaguar. I mean, it's the last thing it becomes, actually. The journey that I take from the north of Belize down through the south of Belize and through this interrupted habitat that the jaguars are fighting against now, you know, because they need to be connected, but their habitat is being chunked up and deforested piece by piece. So they're starting to struggle in certain parts of the country. And along the way, telling that story, I met all these amazing people who were working to help save these jaguars, working to save the habitat. And it just becomes so much more than, wow, the prediction of seeing a jaguar in some ways, you know. So and there's so many examples of that. Like you said with the wolf ranger with Dan Curry out in Eastern Washington, we didn't see a wolf then. We didn't hear a wolf, but he was able to convey what it's like to see one in his neck of the woods. And, you know, I've seen them elsewhere, so I draw into that sort of knowledge. And fortunately, you don't need that visual image like you do with the documentaries. Like, all right, there's the wolf or there's the jaguar. Yeah. You just sort of build the poetry around it if you don't see what you've set out to go and see.
I think you're obviously talking about the next season of The Wild. Have you managed to do things that you've wanted to do, especially with sort of COVID restrictions? Have they thankfully let you get where you wanted to go?
In some ways, we keep on postponing and delaying some episodes, some production windows. One we're hoping to do is in May in California, the California condor, you know, the giant vultures. Look like pterodactyls. These are incredible birds and a wonderful story around them. And we've been trying to make sure that we get there in time for their nesting season and a season when the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is out tagging these birds and trying to monitor them. But there's restrictions around that, you know, that we've got to make sure that we tick all the COVID boxes, and it's been pushed a little bit. So we're hoping it'll happen. So in some ways, yes, some stuff's been postponed, but then again, I'm lucky to live where there's lots of stuff on the doorstep as well. We're going to do some field work on wolverines in a couple of weeks' time. So, and wolverines are just these amazing, amazing animals. You know, I've spent my life obsessed with and working with grizzly bears. And people say, you know, they're one step more cantankerous than a grizzly bear or wolverine. They've got real attitude. They climb over the tops of mountains rather than going around the easy route. You know, they are just high elevation, deep snow, nasty winter conditions, incredible animal. So we're going to go do that in 2 or 3 weeks' time. But lots of things we have to do to work around, as it is with yourself, I'm sure. Long boom poles and, you know, trying not to be masked up when you don't have to be, so you use lav mics instead of a hand mic, and that's worked really well. We did that a lot in Belize because you don't want someone talking through a mask like this, right? You want the clear voice, so that the lav mics work really well for that. So lots of new experiments we've been trying and trying to work around the whole limitation.
I think a lot of people have been using all kinds of new tech, you know, that we've never previously even used before. The fact that you and I are chatting on Zoom, for instance, it's just a thing. That's just what we do, and no one can tell. We may as well be in a studio. You know, it's quite
there.
It's
you
quite
are
reassuring.
In Glasgow. It's magic, isn't it? Yeah.
Sitting in Glasgow, the rain hitting the windows. Yes. You know, you don't realize where you live is so close. I love going up to the Highlands, but you don't realize you can't, you know, how much you appreciate being able to go until you really can't. So I think that's the thing, that listening to the wild gives you a chance to be able to go places. Have people got in touch and told you that they found it, you know, over lockdown, listening to it, that it's been really helpful for them?
Yeah, they have. It's happened a lot, actually. We've got lots of such nice comments from listeners about, and quite surprising, you know, a few surprises are, kids love the show as much as adults. It's definitely not a kids show. It's not slanted that way at all, but it's been a surprise that kids have loved it, and it's been their little dose of nature when they're not able to get out. And people even suffering from mental illness, we've heard from a couple of people that are really struggling, and how the wild has helped them sort of get grounded again and think about nature and sort of recalibrate. And, you know, broadly, that's my mission, is to inspire people with nature, get people back to nature, because once they're back in nature, they love it, and then they want to protect it and do something to help it, right? So I'm not just out to be a voice telling stories. I'm out to be a voice that triggers good things for wildlife. And so it seems to be that people are making those connections, and definitely lockdown has focused people on this need for a dose of the natural world, and it seems to be working for them. Yeah.
In terms of, obviously, you work on other projects as well. You've got Bear Trek that's now available on Amazon. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. Oh, thanks for asking about that. That's an amazing project. Took us a lot of years, 7 years to produce, and it was really my first foray into film, because I traveled around the world in my 20s and 30s working on different bear projects, and from places like Pakistan and Spain and Ecuador and all these places where there's these amazing people working on their own bear species. You know, there's 8 bear species in the world. And I thought, what do they need? These people need more exposure. Again, back to the stories that they don't get out there, and they're not telling. Some of the most amazing stories in the world. And they need funds. So we made a film called Bear Trek, and it was to do both those things, get them exposure and get them funding. And it's worked. We've given over $250,000 back to the projects in kind and in cash to the projects that are in the film. And it's a nice little model of, you know, we tell your story, we help bring some funding for you. And it's just been this incredible, I don't know, a real life journey, really, you know. And all of the biologists in that film, there's 3 of them that I go and visit on the back of a motorcycle into Borneo and into Peru and the Canadian Arctic, 3 different bear species, 3 different bear biologists, and all these like heroes doing their quiet work for the rest of us, you know. And so, yeah, it's lovely. I'd love it if people can tune in and watch it. Yeah, it's a very heartfelt film to me, because it ticks all the boxes. It's the bears I love. It's the people that I've really become friends with, and it's inspiration that I think we all need right now.
Yeah, we definitely need inspiration. In terms of other media that inspire you, are there any other podcasts that you listen to, or documentaries that you particularly take from?
You know, I love all Attenborough's stuff, of course. That's a no-brainer, isn't it? You know, some of his recent films, especially talking about, you know, your question about, is conservation on the radar more? Is that changing? Well, even with Sir Attenborough's work, it's really changed, and he's really pushing things hard now. And that's really good to see. And on the podcast side of things, I honestly don't have a lot. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, because I'm usually out in my own head in the forest and thinking that, you know, But the ones that I have heard that I do like that are wildlife and environment related, I love the BBC Earth podcast. It's hosted by Emily Knight. Really like that. It's nicely done. It's like shows how you can do a, you can have a conversation with an interesting person, add layers of sound, and just bring a conversation to life, you know, in really wondrous ways, which is what we do as well. And so there's like lots of nice parallels there. So I enjoy that one. And then a mate of mine recently started one that's really fun. His name is Wes Larson. His handle is Grizz Kid. So he's also from the bear world.
Okay.
And his podcast is called Tooth and Claw. And it's quite new, but it's lovely because, you know, most scientists, you know, can get quite serious. We're all dedicated to our science, ecology, craft, you know, and Wes has got a cracking sense of humor, but he does even better when he's got a sidekick. And so his show, he's got a couple of friends that are sidekicks that are pretty much clueless about wildlife, and Wes is an expert. So it's all about animal attacks and interactions, and so it's worth checking out. I've listened to a few of them, and they're a good laugh, and also lots of good information in them. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds great. And I think that's what you need sometimes to be taken into a world, is you need someone like someone who doesn't know everything to go, actually, no, explain that to me. No, you're going to have to break that down. No, do this.
Exactly. I've thought of doing that version of a podcast myself with, I've got some funny friends that just make me laugh with their silly questions and banter. And it'd be really wonderful to do that at some point, you know? So yeah, it's a fun format. And laughter is so important as well, you know, just bringing, I once heard someone say, laughter is the shortest distance between two people. And it's so true, isn't it? You know, if we can all laugh at the same things, suddenly our differences seem to sort of evaporate a little bit.
Yeah, it's like sitting in the pub with your friends. Suddenly you're like, I'm home if we can laugh. Which actually, my final question, it's very important, Chris. So you have obviously, you do a lot of VO work. And I do VO work, so I have my Radio 3 voice. But you have a very, you have your very specific nature documentary VO work, which again,
where's this going?
I'm just asking if you have a general, if you have any tips for how that voice should be, or if you can teach me how to do that specific. It's very good, and I wish I could do this. This is what I'm aiming to do.
Well, it's funny you ask that, because I don't know. Sometimes I'm always trying to tap into different types of voices without being self-conscious about it. And you know, it's quite difficult to do, isn't it? You just want to be natural and be yourself. So there's that. There's the conversational side, which I use very much more in my podcast. And some episodes more than others. Some episodes lend themselves to feeling just real chatty, you know, like you're in a pub with your mates. And I strive for that in some of them. But then some of it is definitely a bit more along the spectrum towards like television narration, which feels a bit more traditional and full and scripted. You know what I mean? So it's, I try to have a different voice for the different things that I do and don't always nail it, but love exploring it, you know.
I have a different BBC Scotland voice from Radio 3, for instance. Totally. My vowels are all over the place.
That's great. And is that subconscious or something you consciously go into?
I think you'll know the same. I mean, I lived in England for 4.5 years and I just recently moved back up. And all of my vowels, my mum was so unimpressed when I came back from England and was talking about flies and dying and crying. That, you know, that wasn't, you know, she accused me of sounding like David Tennant, Chris. You know, Glasgow via London.
Come back when you've got the proper accent back, yes.
That is, it's very specific, though, I think, the documentary tone, which I think
it is
lovely.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I did a couple of documentaries last year, and what's changed since, I've only been doing the podcast for 2 years, but I've been doing voiceovers and hosting television stuff for like 12 years or so now. So I've got a lot of friends in that business and that I do voiceovers for. And one of them said to me last year, it's great, Chris, what you're doing, but can you give me a bit more of your podcast voice? So it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that industry of television style voiceovers is changing as well. And maybe podcasts have had something to do with that. People want the friendlier, chatting to a friend type tone in some cases, not in all of them. And I'm often thinking about Sir David and his approach to it. And he's just so masterful. And I went through these years of thinking, oh, what does he do? I need to do it like that. But there's no way. You can't ever replicate what he does. He's so special and unique, you know. So it's just a case of finding your own tone, isn't it? And then I think the script itself forces you into saying things in a certain way. And when I'm scripting a podcast, I script it as if I'm saying it versus as if I'm reading a documentary script, and you know what I mean, right? So it's, you just kind of slip into the mode, hopefully. Hopefully the right one that day.
Absolutely, I agree. So can you say, I'm Chris Morgan and you're listening to Podworld in your best documentary voice?
I'm Chris Morgan and you're listening to Podworld.
Lovely. Perfect. So where can people find out what you're doing next? Socials, podcasts, where are they going?
Social at Chris Morgan Wildlife and at The Wild Pod for the podcast. And my website, chrismorganwildlife.org, and also thewildpod.org as a website. So there's three or four places to check out.
Perfect. And season three is coming soon.
It is. It launches on April 6th. So we're really excited about that. Really good episodes coming up. And yeah, people have been in touch saying, where are you? We've had to take these big gaps between seasons, you see, because the production is so time consuming. But it's always feels really great that people are waiting for us, you know, so excited to kick it off.
I'm excited to listen. But thank you so much for joining me. It's been great fun.
I've enjoyed it. Thanks so much, Louise.
Thank you.
So in this last section of the show, we bring together all the extra podcast nuggets that we came across when we were researching for the show.
Speaking of nuggetinis.
Exactly. And we also give you some listener recommendations to sprinkle all over the top, and thus ensuring you leave this podcast with your ears full of amazing shows to listen to. So Lou, what extras have you got for us today?
Okay, so most importantly, and I will be full transparency here, my friend Hannah, Hannah Tribe, she works on the BBC Countryfile magazine, and your friend also, so friend of the pod, we shall say.
Yeah.
The Countryfile magazine podcast is just this lovely, wholesome, wonderful journey through the British countryside. So it's got great walks and the explorations of nature as it's happening. It's got, Hannah does a 5 or 6 minute soundscape every Friday, which you can just tune into. And every so often she'll sort of guide where you are and what you're listening to and what you're seeing. But most of it's kind of left to your imagination. And it's just really fascinating. It's just this lovely, evocative and very, very interesting. But also, again, in that way we've been talking about, quite transportative to take you away from everywhere. And it's just really very soothing and very gentle as well. And I really, really enjoy it. And I'm going to pick Hannah's brains at some point. So Hannah, if you're listening, I'm coming for you. Away from that, additionally, I've been listening to the National Trust podcast, which again is about Britain's heritage sites, but there's also some really interesting stuff in there that you might not imagine. They've been doing some quite inventive stuff over lockdown because obviously people haven't been able to visit their properties. And also the Scotland Outdoors podcast, which is another BBC podcast, but it's from BBC Radio Scotland. And I found it, again, really interesting because I'm from Scotland, but haven't been able to leave Glasgow all of this time. And it just gave me really interesting insights and sort of migratory geese and journeys into snow and what people are doing. So I really enjoyed that, as well as a nice sort of trip outside. So I think anything that's Scotland Outdoors focused, if you haven't been able to make it, you know, north of the border for a while, do listen. It's great. And some great Scottish voices in there too.
I listen to loads of podcasts for this because it's not necessarily an area of podcasting that I've really spent huge amounts of time with my ears recently. So I wanted to go quite deep. And my extras are actually, I think all three of them are American. So the first one is Overheard at National Geographic. And this, similar to the BBC Earth use of the great content they have, this concept is the same. They basically have access to these explorers and filmmakers and photographers, and they basically tell stories through those people. So it's a great way of making the most of who they have on staff, who they have in the offices. They're fairly short, 30-minute episodes, and it's just things that are interesting to them. For example, like trying to spot Himalayan snow leopards was a whole episode on that, which I just found fascinating. Really difficult to spot a snow leopard in the snow, it turns out.
In the snow. Basically, where's Wally, but with leopards. Yeah, without the stripes.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And then there's Outside In. And this is one from New Hampshire Public Radio. But it covers really interesting global topics, like how the Norwegians cope with dark winters better than maybe than people who live further south than Norway. And then my final extra is called Origin Stories. And that, you know, in a way, that's not necessarily the natural world today, but it's more about the natural world yesterday, or certainly where we come from as humans. And I just came across one of the episodes, which I found really interesting. It was called The Teeth Remember. And it was fascinating because they basically looked at some of the oldest ancestors in, I think it was in southern France. And through microscopic analysis of their teeth, they could tell that these children had been lead poisoned at a very specific age. And they could tell so many things about the development of these children, Neanderthals, basically. And anyway, that led me to discover other episodes. And I just like this whole idea of understanding the world through the origins of humans. And yeah. And that was really interesting. And then, even though I said those were my last extras, there are actually a couple of brand new episodes.
Of course they're not.
There's a couple of brand new podcasts that I thought I'd call out. And one is called Call of the Wild, and that is the WWF new podcast. And it's a podcast hosted by Kel Spellman, who's an actor and he's the WWF ambassador. It's about what each and every one of us can do to make a difference in the fight to save our planet. So it's similar to the 39 ways we talked earlier, but with a WWF environment. And then the final brand new one, which I thought would be really interesting to some people, is called the Atlas Obscura. And Atlas Obscura is actually a website and it's a guide to the world's hidden wonders anyway. But the podcast launched at the end of February. And it's basically that. It's an audio guide to the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. And it involves, again, it's using the reporters they have on staff. And I think it's led by the co-founder, Dylan Turris. And they explore a new wonder every day, I think, between Monday and Thursday.
I love that website as well. I can just spend hours on the Atlas Obscura website, just going from the strange things that live at the side of American highways. And yeah, it's a fascinating. And there's always some really good scary stuff in there, DMR. Always some creepy stuff, hauntings, curses.
I thought you'd be attracted to the really scary stuff.
Unexplained activities I am all for. But we've now got to the listener recommendation part of the podcast. So we actually had a lot of people recommend the podcast that we have already mentioned, but there are some special extras. So Lucy got in touch and she really likes One of the Family, which is a podcast by Nikki Campbell about how dogs are here to make us better people. And it's a really interesting exploration of how dogs interact with humans and how important they are when they come into the family. And it really means that I think we should be talking about an entire pet episode soon, DMR. I think we need to talk about pets because I also listen to a podcast solely about cats called The Purrcast. So I think we should absolutely be doing that. But yes, One of the Family with Nikki Campbell.
There's so many ones about dogs as well that I think there was one that caught my eye called Sexier Than a Squirrel, which I quite liked the title of. And
maybe we should do a dog episode. Maybe we should just have a specific dog-related episode.
Yeah, there's plenty. We also had Bryony, who sent in a recommendation actually via our brand new website. So we have a new website at podworld.fm, and you go to the contact form, you can send us recommendations or just some feedback through that form. That'd be great. And she says, Speak Up for Blue is an essential podcast. If you want to better understand the role that our oceans play, I guess, and understand the conservation projects going on around the world. And that brings us to the end of this podcast.
It does.
Yeah, it does. And we've been working on some new categories and new themes for the coming weeks. So what genres are we going to talk about next time?
Yeah, we're kind of breaking out of the traditional Apple podcast genres and making our own genre mashups.
Yes.
So next episode, we've actually been inspired by our deep dive into our world, and we're going to look at podcasts specifically that want to make the world a better place. So we have an interview with the co-host of the Global Goals cast, Edie Lush, and I cannot wait to speak to her about that. So that's what we're going to be doing next.
And don't forget to get in touch with us. We're at PodPodWorld on Twitter and Instagram, or the website podworld.fm if you have any podcast recommendations or comments about the show. And see you next time.
Goodbye.
PodWorld is produced, edited and hosted by Louise Blaine and David Mar Roberts, otherwise known as DMR. The design and graphics from Dylan Channon, and the research by Ella Mar Roberts. The theme music was composed by Dan Phillipson. We'd like to say a big thank you to the team at Dialect for their never-ending support.